From Edge Radio 99.3 FM, this is an edit of The Dice Men Cometh, the podcast.
The Dice Men Cometh.
The Dice Men Cometh are live at PAX Australia in the Drop Bear Theatre on Saturday the 1st of November from 1:30 in the afternoon. It is our first live appearance before... well, actual people who can criticise us in the flesh.
Yeah, baby.
And frankly, we could use some help. So please come along.
We'd love to see you there.
Yeah, but if you're thinking about PAX Australia, if you're going to be floating around 1:30 at the Drop Bear Theatre, just come along and support us. And have, you know, even if it's out of pity.
Yeah, or heckle us, or throw things, give us money, whatever. We'd love to see you there.
My name's Trent.
And I'm Mark.
And we are the Dice Men Cometh, talking board games once again on Edge Radio 99.3 FM. What's coming up in the show tonight, Mark, please?
We have got another jam-packed show. We're going to have a bit of an Essen wrap-up. We're going to have our interview with Julian from Unhalf Bricking Games, rescheduled from last week. We're going to talk about...
I'm sorry. That was my fault we didn't play it. We're going to play it. Carry on.
Anyway, Trent stuffed up the interview, so we're going to play it again this week. I'm going to do a film review, and we're going to talk about what we've been playing. All that and more on The Dice Men Cometh.
And we start this way.
Woo!
Lamb of God! To put us all in a happy mood this evening.
Kyle will like this one.
I could listen to that guy's kick drums all day.
That's nice.
You know, sometimes nice. I do. It's Trent and Mark on the Dice Men Cometh tonight, and it's the weekly little nerd hour that we have here. But it's not just any kind of nerd poison that we have here. It's very, very, very niche. Board games and card games.
Tabletop games, if you like.
Including role-playing games. And that's what we
And even miniatures games occasionally.
It's a broad church.
We're about it all.
It's a broad church in a narrow niche.
I think we've got them all covered.
We've been playing some stuff lately. We normally start the show by talking about that. Would you like to commence proceedings?
Well, I'll tell you what. I have had a week like almost no other. Almost.
How's that?
I have not... played any physical board games this week.
What's
I know it's
on?
A shock. Look,
life
I've
is
had,
getting in the way.
Look, it's a combination of school holidays with the kids, being busy at work. I had a couple of days sick. But it's funny because it made me reflect on how gaming also impacts on my life in the non-physical sense. It was great in terms of Garth covering off about iOS games.
Right, right.
And I know we had talked about doing that for a while, and I had sort of avoided it because I hadn't really done much of that stuff.
You sound like you've had some kind of iOS epiphany.
No, not at all. But it made me think about how I go old school. Old school with the online games. Because I hang out, and I have done for quite some time, quite a few years, at a website called yucata.day. yucata.de. Now, this is just about the original German website for the playing of German games, as they say in the spiel on their website, because obviously dates back from the days before these... from the days before these games were even referred to as Euro games, they were referred to as German games.
But this thing is being updated with new titles, is it?
So, look, this website, when I first came across it, it probably had about maybe 10 titles. I'm holding up to Trent, here's an A4 page with a list of all the games that are available to be played on this site. So
I see Russian Railroads is on there.
We're talking A Few Acres of Snow, Balloon Cup, Campaign Manager 2008, Carcassonne Hunters and Gatherers, El Grande, Founding Fathers, Russian Railroads, Roll Through the Ages, Hey, That's My Fish, Vikings, Stone Age, and about Thunderstone, and about 50 or 60 more. So normally they get one or two new games a month, probably.
I don't understand what this website is. Yep. So these aren't apps that you...
No. So it's all based on the website. Yeah. It's all with real people. So
this is a licensed product. This isn't fan-made adaptations
It's funny, because it started off the whole fan-made thing, and then obviously over time, they've got permission from a lot of the game producers to actually use the pictures There. So most of the games, you'll see the real pictures of the real art.
Yeah.
It's free to use. They ask for donations, but it's free to use. And I've been using it now, as I said, I reckon I've been playing there 7 or 8 years since I started board games.
This is sounding in my head, because it's not an app, it's not touchscreen. Yep. This sounds really clunky.
Yeah, no, it's actually really simple, and it's all turn-based. So basically, you log on, and there'll be a list of what games you're currently playing, and you basically take your turn in that game. That game disappears. It takes you to the next game. You take your turn in that game. So at the moment, I'm probably playing like 25 different games. But you just have, and you can do multiple turns in a day. You can play real time. I've often been sitting there at night time, and there'll be someone who, there's like a little message board at the front, and someone will say, hey, you want to play a game of such and such real time?
Yep.
So you just log on, and bang, 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 you actually play real time, and you can play it through it really quickly.
Are there tutorials?
There's the rules, but no, because there's no playing AI. It's all playing real people. So you can make buddies, and you can then invite your buddies to play games with you, or you can just put a game up where you say, I want to play a four-player game of Thunderstone, and there's me, and there's three slots. People look at the open invitation and say, yeah, I'll play that. There's rankings. You can set it so only people who are within a certain... either side of your ranking can play, so it's a fair game where you can let anyone play.
Sure.
You can have it, there is, because there's rankings in the site, you can make it a scored game or a not scored game, because you can progress through levels, but it's not really about that. It's just about interacting with people, and it's funny, because it did make me reflect. Like, I have made friends, people that I play against, I've never met them in real life, don't know what they look like. I know them from perhaps Board Game Geek, or just from this site where I've played regular games against people there. I play games there against Carl from our gaming group.
Sure. Guest of the show.
Yeah, we play Vikings there.
Okay.
Stuff like that. So, it is really old school. There's no AI. And because it's like one turn at a time and then you go, playing a game like Russian Railroads, a heavy strategy game, unless you're taking notes and you go, okay, tomorrow, on my turn tomorrow, I'm going to make this move. I always come in and go, oh, what was I doing again? Which is actually what I do in real life, by the time the turn comes back around to me. But, it's really fun. And it's funny how I've played Russian Railroads once in real life and I didn't really understand it. Now I've played it like half a dozen times and I'm actually starting to learn.
Yeah. Okay.
And it'd be great to go back and play it again. So it's a great tool for someone like me who this week has had a really flat-out week and hasn't got to play real games, but I've still got to play some actual games.
So there you go. Mark's been playing games in his underpants. myself, I've been playing games with actual people. In particular, a title I've been wanting to get this to the table for a while. Euphoria, Build a Better Dystopia from Stonemaier Games. That's the full title, Euphoria, Build a Better Dystopia. This is a worker placement game for 2 to 6, where your dice are your workers. It's kind of it's Brave New World, the game. It's sort of a Logan's Run, Zardoz, Metropolis type of scenario where new civilizations come up after an apocalypse, and you've got your haves and your have-nots. And Brave New World is the single biggest literary touchstone for this one.
Yep.
You roll your dice. You only come up with two at the start, and the number that you roll is the intelligence of your workers. If your workers, and you can get more dice and more workers, but if they ever get too smart, they give up and leave. So the whole idea is that you're some kind of nameless middle manager in this dystopian factory system.
Yep.
You realize that there's got to be a better way to life, and you've got to spread your authority around the various parts of the board.
Respect my authority.
In order to take over. It's actually, it's misleading because it's actually a race where you've got to get your commodities, your energy, your water, your food, and your bliss, aka Soma, from those who've read Brave New World. So you get your commodities to buy your resources, which are stone and clay and gold, and you use those resources to build marketplaces. And then you place your authority tokens via these marketplaces. Sounds complicated. It is.
Yeah, I must admit, I've seen it from a distance a couple of times, and it does look... It has one of those looks of an overcomplicated game to me.
You know what? The saving grace of it is that on your go, you're either putting one or two dice on, mm-hmm. or you're taking them off. And that's all okay, you have to do. And so theoretically, your goes should be fairly quick.
Okay.
Although those prone to analysis paralysis, you're going to suffer from here. The artwork's fabulous.
Yeah.
There's these markets that you build have these fantastic sort of dystopian 1984 sort of names. Mm. Like there's the Academy of Mandatory Equality, the Cafeteria of Nameless Meat, and one of my favourite ones, your friendly local game, Bonfire. You build these locations, and there's a whole bunch of these locations that come up randomly through the game, so there's good replayability in there. You're converting your resources into authority. It's a bit thinky. I want to love this, mm-hmm. and like I say, it plays up to six, which is great.
Yeah.
With six, it's going to take 2 hours,
yeah.
Maybe even a little bit longer. Maybe it's a bit of an acquired taste, but if that sounds like your kind of deal, then give it a burl.
And is this? Can I ask? Is this your copy?
It is.
Because the reason I ask is I know there was a copy floating around the Hobart Game Society, and the reason why was because. Our friend Splat, who at one stage was organising a GameCon in November, had got a copy donated from the designer as a play-to-win copy. And what the designer had sent it to him saying, as long as you do a play-to-win competition, I'm happy to give you this copy of the game. So basically, anyone who played it, their name got put in on a list.
Right.
And at the end of the con, the idea was a name would be drawn out of the hat from the people who played it, and one would win it.
How did I not know this competition was going on? Because I went and bought it.
Well, because he's got his con sort of is now not happening, but he's still got this copy.
Yeah.
So he's been doing that anyway, keeping a track of the names of people who've been playing it at the Hobart Game Society.
Well, listen, I think it's a great idea
to get it out there.
Yeah, and I think it's a really good game, but there is that initial learning curve, and like it's for the beardy. It's definitely for the beard and for the women with beards too.
The hipsters. It's a hipster game, is it?
Now, talking board games, because that's what we do.
Yeah.
The Spiel in Essen last weekend in Germany, the world's biggest game fair,
maybe? Yeah.
We've got some game titles, that all the stuff that people have been talking about and that we want to sort of run through through the rest of the show. And as promised, the interview with Julian,
fantastic,
from Unhalf Brick and Games, an online Australian retailer. He goes to Spiel every year, and I had a chat to him a little way back, and we're going to bring you that chat in just a moment here on Edge Radio, 99.3 FM. This is The Dice Man Cometh. Edge Radio, 99.3 FM, Trent and Mark, it's The Dice Man Cometh, and we're talking Spiel from Essen in Germany. Essen, of course, translates to...
eating, to eat, the verb to eat.
So it's a town called Eating.
To eat, yeah.
Right, and every year there's this enormous get-together called the Spiel. 58,000 square metres of board gaming and an expected 150,000 players turned up this year. Only €10 to get in. That's about $14 for this thing. Look, one of the reasons that people go there is to buy cheap games. Get this, Camel Up, the winner of the Spiel des Jahres this year, was €18.
Wow.
To purchase. That works out to be about $26. $35 it is on Amazon. And if you buy it retail in Australia...
$70 or something, is it?
$48.
Really?
But, you know, look... We've said many times on this show, you've got to support your friendly local retailers here in Australia, even though, yes, you might be able to get them a little bit cheaper online, because if you want game stores in this country, you've got to pay for them.
Yeah, absolutely.
You've got to pay for them. One bloke who has a game store is Julian from Unhalf Brick and Games. I spoke to him a couple of weeks ago, and will you explain what happened?
So we came in, Trent stuck his little USB stick in the machine and said, where's the file? And played around with it for about 10 minutes before the show started, and
here it is.
It didn't work. Anyway, a week later, we're back. We've got Julian, and he's chatting to Trent, telling us all about Essen.
Okay, so Essen Spiel, 4 days of fun, friends, and playing a shirtload of games, and one man who's going to see every single one of them is Julian from Unhalf Brick and Games. G'day, mate. Thanks for talking to us on The Dice Man Cometh.
Not a problem.
Julian, you've been going to the Spiel for the past 5 years. Can you tell us why it is that this fair
is so important, and just explain it to those of us who are uninitiated.
Essen has been running for many decades. Germany was the focus of board games long before the English-speaking world cottoned on to the style of games that they were playing. So Essen has always been the trade fair for releasing new games, and it's now one of two places where new games tend to be released, the other being Nuremberg. I had to make a decision which to go to, and I chose Essen, and I haven't regretted it. It's an incredibly hard work 4 days for me. I mean, I'm working from 10 in the morning till 7 at night in the fair, which to say you're working playing board games sounds a bit of a stretch, but if you can imagine playing 4 or 5 turns in maybe 15, 20 minutes, making a snap decision not only on whether you like the game, but whether you think other people will like it enough to buy it, committing some of your money, moving down a few stands, sitting down and starting the process all over again, and doing that over and over and over again for 4 days, the brain work involved in learning games and assessing them in that short of time is incredibly tiring.
It's clearly a very German event. I mean, looking at it from the outside, and what exactly does that mean, aside from it all runs like clockwork and not a lot of stuff's in English?
Well, strangely, you'd expect that. The first year I was there, it certainly didn't run by clockwork. There was a problem with the ticketing system. I was tied in sub-zero temperatures for 2 hours queuing for a ticket. It doesn't seem very German when you're inside either. There is now such a huge influx of American and British people that actually you go past a stand and you'll hear people talking German, but you'll also hear them talking French, you'll hear them talking Italian, you'll hear them talking English. You cannot promote a game at Essen unless you have volunteers who between them can speak maybe 5 or 6 languages, because that's what you're going to get. And there was kind of an amusing incident last year. We were playing a game. I won't say what it is because I wasn't very impressed with it. We were playing the game and I said, we've got to do this. And that just doesn't seem to work. The game seems to break at that point. And somebody on the other side of the table said, no, we've got to do this. And I said, well, the rules clearly state this in English. And she said, well, yes, in German they clearly state this. And we said, well, okay, who's the designer? And we looked on the front of the box. Ah, so-and-so, they're French. We put a hand up and said, excuse me, can we borrow the French rules? We looked at the French rules. We go, ah, clearly the English is a mistranslation. It's certainly a cosmopolitan environment where people would talk to you in multiple languages.
Now, tell us about the business side of what it is that you're doing there and the sorts of deals that you're making, Julian, because, I mean, not only are you looking for stuff that's going to impress you, you've also got to impress the publishers enough to actually get them to sell you the stock. Is that right?
Yeah, it's a funny old thing. I mean, I've only been going there 4 years, but even in that time, things have changed. I mean, the first year, I met quite a few of the small publishers, the self-publishers. They then said, well, how do you work? I said, well, look, if you sell to some of the other Australian, in fact, all, as far as I'm aware, the other Australian buyers who are there, your game will be put on a shelf, and if somebody asks for it, they can buy it. But that's not the way I work. With me, if people want to try the Essen games, I have them open on the table. I'll teach them, or they're available for them to take away and play themselves. And this has always been a major part of the way I run my business, that games sell themselves. My efforts at Essen is very much a cooperative one with the publisher, to the extent that I will get your game on a table, and if it's any good, it'll sell. I'm a gamer. Most people who run shops are professional shop managers, and they're very good at it, and they make a lot of very good business decisions, and I make a lot of very bad business decisions. But the difference is, more one of my customers than I am one of them. I am a gamer who's going looking for good games, and if other people want to buy them, that's great. I'm not going to say too much about each of the games because people can go and look them up. There's a game called Aquasphere, which sounds kind of intriguing. There's a new game from Ted Alsbach, who did Mutant Meeples, Suburbia, a lot of the werewolf games, certainly One Night, Ultimate Werewolf and such like. And he's got a game out called the castle of Mad King Ludwig, which sounds really unusual and interesting. And that is one of the major things I look for in a game. If somebody's brought out a new medieval or Renaissance trading game, it's going to have a lot of positive buzz about it before I'm going to sit down and look at it. I'm looking at interesting themes and innovative designers, and you don't tend to get particularly innovative medieval and Renaissance trading games. I've been playing Euro games for 30-something years now, and so I really have had my fill of that style of game. Panamax, about the building of the Panama Canal, looks interesting, though I know I've got a few put aside for me. I want to try it before I get any more.
Yeah, I'm a little bit worried about that one purely because it appears to be named after a headache tablet.
Yeah, well, maybe that could be appropriate. It certainly sounds like quite a high level, a high complexity economic game. So then there's a lot of other things that I find aesthetically pleasing. I've always been keen on the Japanese games. The first year I was there, I got Bus Stop the Board Game and the Truckers, and I only got a few copies because they just don't bring many with them, and I sold out of them so quickly and been unable to replace them. And this year there's maybe a dozen Japanese productions which are beautifully illustrated. The artwork and the ideas in them just sound such fun. There was one where the theme was somebody's lost their memory and you play the therapist and that person trying to recover their memories. Now, I have no idea how that game works, but it sounds fascinating. And that's what I'm looking for when I go to Essen.
And we wish you the best of luck on your mission, Julian from Unhalf Bricking Games. Thank you for talking to the Dice Men Cometh.
No worries. Thanks very much.
That was Julian from Unhalf Bricking Games talking about his experiences in Essen.
Well, that was recorded before he went to Essen.
Shh, I was trying not to give it away.
Well, anyway,
we're going to play a song. We're going to come back and talk a bit more about Essen, some of the games that have come out of there as the hotness.
Yeah, about the actual games. And these are the things that have got everyone excited. And there's an incredible list longer than your arm.
Absolutely.
So no way we're going to get through all of them.
We'll be back to that shortly. That was Enola Fall, a great Tassie act, with their song I Was Miles Away. Sorry I Was Miles Away, and I think it sounds about what I was doing at the start of the last track where I totally missed the fact that the song finished and we were back on air.
Don't apologise. We all expect you to be an idiot, Mark. It's fine. It's fine.
Anyway, you're on The Dice Men Cometh with Trent and Mark, Edge Radio 99.3 FM. Essen Games, there's just so many of them, Trent.
Oh my God, 800 plus exhibitors from 41 countries.
I know, it's just, where do you begin? Where do we begin?
Well, I've just begun by diving into the website Board Game Geek and having a look at the hotness. And, you know, all we can do from this far away on the other side of the planet is just, you know, have a look at the coverage of the event. The world's toy and game media are all there descending on Germany. And that's why a lot of companies, you know, big name companies got their act together like Hasbro, are not just releasing games, they're announcing games at Essen, like Magic the Gathering,
the strategy
board game. So Magic the Gathering, in case you don't know,
has been living under a rock for the last 21 years.
Yeah. So it's one of the most popular collectible card games in the world, if not the most, and it's being turned into a board game. So 2 to 5 players, apparently. It's a non-collectible game, so there aren't any rare cards or any components that you have to track down, at least not at the moment.
I was going to say, although you can bet it's going to have expansions out the wazoo. Oh, perfect opportunity.
Yeah, look, very few details about this aside from the fact that it's happening. And you've seen pictures. It's magic in 3D is what they're saying. But to me, it just kind of looks like an updated version of HeroScape.
Yeah, look, it has a very samey look about it. It looks a little bit like
big chunky hexagonal
Mage Knight.
Yep.
Yeah, you're right. HeroScape crossed with Mage Knight, perhaps.
And so supposedly you're going to be playing spell cards on each other, and the actual cards from the card game are not used in this. It's a totally separate thing.
I know, it's going to be really interesting. Look, we did mention one of our favourite designers, Australian although he's living in the UK at the moment. Matt Dunstan, last week, we mentioned he's going to be there. I don't know if we talked about his actual game. He's got this fantastic new game, Empire Engine. He talked about it on the interview where he used the rondel mechanism. That's Matt Gertz using a lot of his games, where the rondel mechanism exists on these cards, and it is one of these micro
what
games.
What the hell is the rondel mechanism?
It's where
I'm
you
sorry.
Basically have a wheel. Not a physical wheel, but that moves around, and right. different parts of the wheel do different things. One that comes to mind is Macau. Have you played Macau?
No.
Okay. So there's stuff you get, and this the rondel, if you like, a circular thing on the board, it turns, as it turns, you get access to different stuff.
Okay.
Probably Zolkin the Mind Game is an example where they've actually got a physical rondel.
Yes.
In the rondel games, usually it's not something that actually moves, but the bit that you get access to rotates around.
Okay.
And famously, Matt Gertz is a designer that uses this in all of his games. But that one, Empire Engine, you know, it's one of these micro games that supposedly plays in like half an hour with a minimal amount of components, but quite a deal of depth. Right. He was very excited about that.
We'll get Matt back on the show at some point to tell us more about that. Another title, this one from Belgium and Pearl Games. It's called Deus. Build a civilization. Oh, look, I'm already falling asleep. No. I'm assured it's exciting. Build a civilization in a shared modular board that scales up and down depending on the number of players. There are cards that you can either play to build various buildings, I suppose, on the board, or you can discard the cards to make an offer to the gods for various special powers. So it's that classic thing of, do I build myself up or do I spend a card here to take everybody else down? Variation on a well-worn theme, but it is getting some attention. That's Deus from Pearl Games.
Now, look, there was a lot of expansions announced at Essen this year too. And at first, you know, I'm always a bit... Yeah, more ways of milking the lizard. And last week I talked about the expansion to Seven Wonders, Seven Wonders Babel, that adds even more mechanics to that game that you love, Trent. one that I hadn't paid a lot of attention to, but I did during the week. I saw some photos, and it looks quite amazing, is the expansion to Village, one of our favourite worker placement games called Village Port.
Right.
Where basically you've got a whole new board that sits over top of what is the wagon track on Village, and it becomes the port where ships go in and out. And it
you've
adds
literally
these big
got a,
ship cards.
You've
and,
got to blue tack these things to the existing board. It kind of annoys me, but yeah, go
and
on.
So apparently you can have your own family ship that you can board and travel the seven seas, hiring captains, selling goods, picking up commodities, sending family members as missionaries to faraway islands, digging up treasure chests, and... This expansion includes life goal cards that let you pursue your own career, such as becoming a writer, a historian, or even a knight. Sounds like it's going to add quite a bit to the game. That's Village Port, the expansion.
Yeah, I really like the game Village. That's a former winner of the Kennerspiel Prize as well. But I think it's just one of those games that doesn't... There's enough going on already. It doesn't really need it. Okay, let's go to something completely new and original, although... Well, actually, it's a re-release of a game from Japan that's Z-Man. Bringing out. They sold out of all their copies at Essen. Tragedy Looper. Okay. Now, this has got a real manga look and feel about it. It's 2 to 4 players. It's a scenario-based game. There are hidden roles for each of the characters, and there's also a mastermind who... I'm not sure if they run the game or if they're actually a player as such, but there's scenarios with preset tragedies that happened to the character very, you know...
Anime style.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, one of the characters' lives might end in a tragic suicide or something like that. All the players are playing cards face down on these characters in the game to influence their paranoia and their goodwill stats, and you see if the tragedy plays out. If it does and they end up dying... Time suddenly loops back to the start, and you play through it again. And supposedly you keep looping back through this tragedy until such time as it gets resolved and you can figure out which player is actually sabotaging that character. Now, like Julian just said, I don't really know how that could possibly work, but it sounds fascinating. Right? Now, just that whole idea is enough to hook me in. I want to play Tragedy Looper.
It sounds really, really interesting. Now, look, In case there were people listening last week, I just wanted to tidy up. I did say that one of the new hotnesses, the Castles of Mad King Ludwig, I did say it reminded me a bit of Lords of Vegas. Of course I was wrong. It's not Lords of Vegas. It's Vegas Showdown. So Lords of Vegas is the game where with dice where you put dice in casinos and you take over casinos and stuff. Whereas Vegas Showdown is an older title.
Yes, thank you. Where you thank build, you, the internet, for always pointing out where you, our mistakes.
That's right. You build casinos room by room. But that one certainly has gone off, as has this other one called Alchemist, where we mentioned it very, very briefly at the end of the show, but we didn't have enough time to cover it, where you're an alchemist, you're building potions, but one of the things in this game is, of course, it has the iOS app, where that is part of the game, an integral part of the game, where that's where you test your potions to see whether they worked or not. So it is going to be
But it is actually a board game.
Yeah, it's a board game, but then you'd have to have the app to play the game.
Right.
Which is really interesting. So, you know, you have a 6 round of building potions, but throughout the game, you're pulling out your app to test these potions. Apparently, it's been really well received. So we will see how it goes.
Now, you mentioned expansions a moment ago. Essen is also reliable for re-implementations of existing games. So you had King of Tokyo turned into King of New York.
Mm.
You've got Carcassonne, the latest version, Carcassonne Gold Rush, and Settlers of Catan, Ancient Egypt.
Oh, my goodness.
All of those companies and those titles milking the lizard for all they possibly can. But plenty of new things as well. And one of the big Euros from the fair was Die Staufer, or the Staufer Dynasty, again from Z-Man. This one is a game about deploying medieval nobles into 12th century Europe.
Sounds fascinating.
I have nothing to add to this. It's a game for 2 to 5 players, 60-minute brain burner. It just sounds and looks, frankly, diabolically boring, but people love this kind of thing.
They do. Anyway, I think we've talked about enough.
I've got so many more games have to talk about.
Well,
can we play a song, come back and talk about some more?
Yeah, let's do that. Look, let's have some quick wake-up music.
Okay.
And then we'll come back, okay? Well, if you're not awake now, you never will be. That was, of course, the Pogues with a sick bed of Cucullin with a retroactive language warning. You're on Edge Radio with 99.3 FM. Trent and Mark, the Dice Man cometh. Essen, it just never ends.
No, we'd barely even scratched the surface with the titles that people are talking about after this enormous game fair. And one thing that you mentioned last week,
yes,
and I was mocking you mercilessly for the idea of this game, Kanban, the automotive revolution. Can you explain again what the concept of Kanban actually means?
So Kanban...
It's a Japanese word.
Yeah, Kanban is a Japanese word, and it's basically the...
It's pronounced Kanban, I'm sure.
Kanban! Hey! It's used in... Or it started in the automotive industry, you know, post-World War II, where the Japanese industrial machine reinvented itself. And it's the way they manage production lines. And there's these massive big display boards and how they're measuring efficiency and all the spaces along the you know, they measure efficiency at every single step of the way. And it's all
right
in these visual boards they use.
Right, so.
Sounds fascinating.
Someone's turned this into a board game and, oh my God, it looks amazing. Which, I mean, look, I was just thinking that's like the worst idea.
Yeah, I know.
But look, I watched a preview of this thing and I can't wait to get my hands on a copy of this. This looks incredible. So the idea of it is that you're some kind of ambitious middle manager in a Japanese car factory. You've got to train your workers, get them certified, get yourself onto the conference table for meetings so you can make decisions on the fate of the factory. You've got to design your cars. But, you know, you can only design them to a certain level until you get the workers certified. You've got to get the parts all together. The parts are represented by all these different coloured cubes. Oh, my God. There are little car meeples that actually roll out and leave the assembly line. And then you've got to test the cars on a track.
Trent is frothing, literally frothing at the mouth here at the thought of this, aren't you?
Kanban Automotive Revolution. It looks really challenging to play.
I think this could be the demarker of the 21st century. Demarker being one of the super heavy Euros where you only play five or seven turns, but each turn has like 18 phases.
Yep.
One of the first ever Euro games I was introduced to, and it's so super heavy. This could be the demarker of the 21st century.
Well, look, I should point out, we've got no idea when any of these titles are actually coming out, because, you know, down here on the bottom of the world, we're waiting for local distribution deals to get signed, and they're going to take quite a few months to roll out. Maybe we'll have some of these titles by Christmas. More likely, I think we'll be looking at the new year. So Kanban, that's another one. Age of Soccer.
Right.
From the sublime to the ridiculous.
Surely if it's in Germany, it'd be called Age of Football.
Legends Express have put this out. It's mythological soccer. Uwe Rosenberg's Fields of Aal.
Yeah.
Predictably, people are excited about that Euro title as well, despite it being about cutting peat and building dikes.
Who doesn't love a bit of farming?
Akrotiri from Z-Man Games. They're doing well from the buzz on their games for this year. It's a little two-player game, kind of a Carcassonne-style tile-laying game of Greek exploration with a little bit of market economics in it. Dragon Scroll, another one from Fragor Games, where you're a young dragon, again, laying tiles to explore the world around your little baby dragon nest. And if you find some knights and things and little villages in there, you can burninate them and devour them.
Now, the interesting thing about Fraggle Games is they're one of these companies, they seem to produce one game a year, usually in quite a small supply and very heavy overproduction. Does it look like that this time? Because I haven't seen photos of that one.
Not a lot of photos available, but a very nice looking little miniature of a baby dragon there. And speaking of things that disappear very, very quickly, one of the big hits again this year at Essen was the Japanese stands.
The mini games?
Yeah. So Japon Brand is the name of the distributor in Europe.
Yeah.
They just sold out of everything on the first day.
Wow.
Yeah, so again, you know, it's Japan that's producing all these really innovative, interesting ideas. And these small little games that are cheap to buy, but it's just hard to get your hands on them.
Yeah,
and the production numbers, you know, they're just not there.
You'd actually think it would be easier for us because we're actually not that far away from Japan, but everything goes to Europe, everything goes to the US. We're the poor third cousin. Now, look, while we're talking about poor third cousins, I had the opportunity to see a movie.
Oh, yes, your film review.
Film review of The Knights of Badassdom. Now, I had seen the trailer for this probably 2 years, maybe 3 years ago. The trailer's been around a long time. And in fact, the trailer, I noticed, was actually nominated for a number of awards. The trailer was. Okay. So I had a lot of anticipation about this
movie. It's usually a bad sign, because if the trailer's out, it means they're hunting around for a distributor for the film and they can't get one.
Okay. So, look, the reason I was excited about this film, apart from the trailer was great, apart from that it was about live-action role-playing, it had Peter Dinklage from Game of Thrones in there, obviously, as well as Summer Glau from
Firefly.
Terminator, Sarah Connor Chronicles, Firefly, and all that stuff. Geek cred up the wazoo. So it finally made it out in 2013, believe it or not.
And this is a film about a group of live-action role players who get in over their depth.
So basically, the director is Joe Lynch. I hadn't heard of him before, and now that I did some research on him, I can see why. He's done a few schlock horror-type films.
Wrong Turn 2, Dead End.
There you go. So basically, you know, and look, a brief summary of the story. There's a bunch of friends. They're loser-ish. Of course, there's the one guy who doesn't have to work because he's got all the money in the world.
Right.
And some of these friends are into live-action role-playing. One of their friends who's sort of having a lot of trouble get dumped by his girlfriend. He sort of gets dragged along where he'd half played D&D many, many years ago. That's Ryan Quanten from True Blood. He's the lead. So he goes along. They give him some gear. They dress him up. Peter Dinklage has a bag of crazy shrooms. He's basically like drug-addled almost the whole movie, and really phones it in. Anyway, they go there, and part of the story is that another one of the main characters, Steve Zahn, who's been in lots of things and is usually quite good, he wants to level up to level 28 wizard, which he has to be observed by the DMs and do all this stuff.
Right.
He has this cool book, an old book, where he got from somewhere.
Uh-oh.
Who knows? So Because Ryan Quanten's character hasn't been along.
Hey, do we need to be giving a spoiler alert? Or
look,
this...
I'm not going to be very spoilerific. Yeah. And I tell you what, after I'm finished my review, not many people are going to go and see this. So he has to cast a summoning spell so Ryan Quanten's character can come into the game.
Sure.
So he uses a spell out of this book. Who knows where it came from? There's a bit of backstory about this book that may or may not have been written in the 15th century that was meant to be able to summon angels, but summon demons instead. So, of course, they do the summoning spell. What comes out? A succubus.
Summer Glau.
She's actually one of the LARPers. Right, yeah. Right. A beautiful woman who wants to kill people and eat their hearts. Basically, madness ensues, lots of really, really gory deaths. Like, it is quite a schlock horror.
Yeah, buckets of blood.
And, of course, they try to banish it. Instead of banishing it, they turn it into an even bigger demon. And at this stage, I was sort of going, oh, look, it's okay, it's bearable. Then the bigger demon came. They had borrowed the suit, clearly, straight from the set of Power Rangers. If you've ever seen Power Rangers and the sort of demonic monsters they have there, they look like they've borrowed the suits off the set of the Banana Splits.
So
it's this mad, plasticky, toy-y, giant monster suit.
With a zip up the side.
Exactly. It's really, really bad.
So IMDb rates this movie 5.8 out of 10.
They are so, so overgenerous.
Rotten Tomatoes gives it 55%.
Oh, no.
Where is it on the Mark Rickard scale?
Look, I don't know. I rated a 2.5/3. Like, you know, look, yes, there's some comedy in there. Yes, you've got Summer Glau's +3 hot ass. But really, you know, Peter, that's a line from the movie. Peter Dinklage really phones it in. It was really disappointing. Look, a classic way of how to do a movie like this that worked brilliantly, Tucker and Dale versus Evil.
Right.
You know, that is funny, funny, funny. Lots of really gory horror, but the comedy stays in it. This thing, every time it gets horrible, it's like the comedy falls aside and it's just blood and guts and stuff. It was really a pathetic story. If you want to find out about LARPs, I'd suggest watching there's a documentary called Monster Camp that was, I think it was crowdfunded quite a while ago, but it's actually really interesting about a real LARPing scene. Really interesting. But, yeah, look, 2.5 stars out of 10 for me.
Wow.
That's the Knights of Bardastum. And I did get we did get a tweet after I'd already watched it saying, don't bother. Wish I'd seen that tweet before.
Some Facebook shout-outs very quickly before we go to Russell Bailey, Heath Ferrandon, and Les McCready. Welcome aboard all y'all on the Facebook page, which is, of course, oddly enough, Dice Men Cometh. And next week on the show, we'll be talking a little bit more about our preparations and our panel that we have coming up at PAX Australia in Melbourne, which is, of course, running over 3 days from Halloween, the 31st, over that weekend, Saturday and Sunday, the 1st and 2nd of November. We have been invited to host a panel, and our topic of discussion is board gaming in
other people's worlds.
Yeah, yeah. So designing board games in established franchises and stuff. And we've managed to recruit Martin Wallace, an amazing, one of the world's leading board game designers.
Absolutely, yeah.
Who is going to be kind enough to spend some time with us.
It's going to be amazing.
We also have Mark Morrison, who's a Melbourne-based designer, and he designs these fantastic coins that you can use in all sorts of games. He's done some work with Cthulhu as well. And what we need is people to actually turn up to this thing and, you know, badger us with questions and talk about maybe some of the board games they'd like to see in the various franchises that they enjoy and how they might be able to implement them and put their questions to these designers.
Look, I think it's going to be really interesting. There's so much stuff to explore with this. If you've got some questions you think we should be asking, hit us up on Facebook, hit us up on the tweets, and we'd be able to ask those questions. We've got a whole hour talking to these guys, and look, you know, we're obviously going to do some half-assed preparation, as we normally do, but we'd love to hear from you as to what you think we should talk about. I think it's really going to be exciting, apart from the whole PAX itself is going to be massive.
Yeah.
It's apparently completely sold out. which is quite amazing. Yeah, I did hear there was some re-release of some badges that were bought early and then people had to cancel. But apart from that, it's completely sold out, which is absolutely amazing. Now, before I forget, I will give the shout-out to Ian O'Toole on Twitter. Ian O'Toole tweets, who was the one who said, "Knights of Badassdom is terrible, don't bother." And I got that just after I finished watching it. So thanks anyway, Ian, for giving me a heads up.
All right, let's knock this puppy on the
head. Yeah, let's get out of here.
We're done.
It's been another week. We're off to PAX in just over a week.
But we'll be doing this show before.
Yeah, we got the show next week. Yeah. Now, next week, we're going to be talking about Melissa Rogerson, who's one of the Australian organisers of PAX. Yep. We can have an interview with her to find out what's coming up. It's all going to be very exciting. She's fantastic. You're fantastic. Thanks for joining us again.
Oh, it's another one of your long-winded outros to the show, Mark. Just knock it on the head. Stop.
Hey, now.
Stop talking.
Okay, we're going. Bye.
This has been an edit of The Dice Men Cometh from Edge Radio 99.3 FM, Hobart's independent youth station. Find us on Facebook and edgeradio.org.au.